Hello, and welcome to the official Anite podcast. I am your interim host, Requiem, filling in for Proton Storm, who's busy getting ready to go study in Cambridge, in England, on someone else's dime, because he lives the life we all wish we could, the miserable bastard. You know, joining me this week, as always, from the Highlands of Scotland, it's Doc Kev.
Good evening.
Also joining me this week, infrequently, semi-frequent contributor, UMR guy.
Greetings, programs.
Okay, we're in Tron now.
We've always been in Tron.
I fucking love Tron, by the way. Love Tron. Yeah. Anyway, and joining us this week for the first time, podcast virgin, Marquan.
Yo, what's up, everybody?
You've made a terrible mistake joining us.
It's irreversible.
It's not too late.
It's a stain on your soul for eternity.
No, he's on the track now. It's too late. Now he's on the list with
you
the rest
really
of
us. Really stain your soul blacker than black? I mean, I think I'm good.
Well, there was that show Darker Than Black. First season really good. Second season terrible. All right. So you know what we do here. We talk about anime, and then we get sidetracked into discussions that have nothing to do with anime. But first, we should do some housekeeping with the website that we're ostensibly attached to. And all the articles are written by Doc Kev, so why don't you break it down, Doc?
Hey, so our website, which we do allegedly write for, is anite.org, or for the longer name is medium.com/anite-official. So since the last time we recorded, yeah, there's three things that I have written. So a couple of things are about Ghost in the Shell. So I'm continuing my gradual trek through the entire Ghost in the Shell franchise. So there's a review of Ghost in the Shell Arise, Borders 1-5. I've no idea why they called the episodes Borders. It's very awkward. Which is the first time I've ever watched that show after I tried watching the first episode a long time ago and basically fell asleep. It's fine, I guess. And then I wrote about the new movie, which is not so new anymore because it came out 9 years ago. And that's the conclusion to the Arise storyline, which was probably better than the TV series. It's pretty decent. And then I wrote about Spy Family, Code White, which is the new movie, which was I saw at the cinema yesterday with my family and a friend. So that's all the things that are currently on the website at the moment. My other moonlighting writing commitments for Anime News Network. I've written a bunch of reviews of manga for their spring manga guide and a couple of light novel reviews for their light novel guide. Those guys are crazy. They some guys wrote 50 reviews. I wrote a dozen, and that was quite enough for me for this time round. So yeah, go check that out if you want to. And that's it. That's everything.
Yeah, calling something the new movie seems dramatically short-sighted.
It does, yeah. I think I comment that in my reviews because there have been another movie since then, so it's not really the new movie. It's the old new movie. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's Ghost in the Shell. They're never going to stop making stuff because it still makes money.
No, I like Ghost in the Shell. I don't want them to stop making stuff because I think it's a really good concept for writing stories. Just this particular version is not the best version.
I mean, it gets more relevant as time goes on.
You've watched Arise, haven't you, Rick?
I did, but I don't remember anything.
Did you ever watch the movie?
I did not ever watch the movie, no. In fact, I'm not even sure I remember there was a movie.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good. It's worth watching. You don't absolutely have to watch Arise beforehand. It's reasonably self-explanatory. But a lot of the plot stuff, despite the fact I watched the series twice over before watching the film, I still didn't get it. So it's not like watching the TV series beforehand really prepares you in any way for the film, because they're really, really terrible at communicating really anything about what the hell's going on in the series.
I mean, that's in the fine Ghost in the Shell tradition.
Even so, standalone complex, despite being complicated, you can still understand what the hell's happening. With Arise, it's like stuff just happens and I've no idea why. And I watched it with my eldest son and he seemed to be getting what was going on. And I said, can you explain to me why the antagonist did any of the stuff she did? And he was like, actually, no, I have no idea why she did any of those things. So there we are. We're both done.
I mean, I had a lot of trouble with the individual 11 half of Standalone Complex. I was like, I'm not sure what's happening.
I watched that the second time over, I found it much easier to understand what was going on. The first time I was a bit lost. But that's because I've never been by a dodgy Hong Kong.
Yeah, the terrible Hong Kong dubs.
Yeah, it's awful.
To be fair, I've never binged it. I've always wondered, like, I'm sure this would hold together better if I wasn't watching it like weekly or, you know, out of order, like as it constantly was put up on Adult Swim.
It wouldn't work out of order at all. But watching three or four episodes at a time over the space of a week or so, that works quite well for Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex.
Okay, so are you out of material for Ghost in the Shell, or do you have more?
Well, I've still got to cover the 1995 movie and Innocence. And then there's a bunch of written material as well. So there's spin-off manga and novels and all sorts of stuff. So I'm not done yet. It's going to take a while.
You're just going to see how far the rabbit hole goes?
I know how far the rabbit hole goes. I have all of the things that are available in English. So they're staring at me from my bookshelf intimidatingly.
Yeah, well, good luck with
that. I think I need it.
I draw a lot of
reading. If you can make the original movie make sense for me, maybe that'd be something. I was never that impressed by it.
I will try. Really?
The OG
best.
One?
Yeah.
I love the mid-90s Ghost in the Shell.
It seemed like it had good concepts, but they were, you talk about, you know, not understanding anything that's happening. That's kind of what it felt like. Stuff just happens, what the hell, as they say, but
they shoved so much storyline into that one movie. Like, they cut a bunch of stuff for time.
I mean, if you've read the manga, like, about eight times over, like I have, and watched all of the other stuff, the original 1995 movie is one of the simpler ones.
Yeah, it's true.
I kind of feel like part of it is I watched it when I was, I don't know, about 25 or 26. If I'd watched it, say, in 1995 when I was, you know, 15-ish, then maybe my mind would have been blown, like, so many people's, but coming at it older, I'm like,
fair, okay. Actually. Because I watched it in 1995.
Yeah, me too.
It was some brand new shit back then. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
I got the VHS for that for Christmas 1995 from my parents.
That's pretty good.
For our younger listeners, a VHS was a form of media where you put a cassette into a VHR or VCR, sorry, a VCR and played. It's kind of like a Blu-ray, but way worse.
It's bold of you to assume they'd have a clue what cassette means.
They must have seen a cassette by now somewhere.
But
you know, in a museum, once, probably.
For once, that anime came out really quickly in the West because the UK's Manga Entertainment partly funded the production of that film, so it got a demand within a month or so after the Japanese theatrical release, and the VHS tape came out almost immediately afterwards, and then the US got it a few months later.
Yeah, I remember that. It was the new hotness back then, and then it became like the cornerstone of the Blockbuster anime corner.
Pretty much.
If you walked into a Blockbuster and went to the anime section, that was pretty much always there, along with Ninja Scroll.
I think Ghost in the Shell was a decent movie. It wasn't as good as Akira. They kept trying to market it as the new Akira, but it just wasn't as good as that.
That's a high bar.
It is a very high bar.
All right. Well, let's move on to the news. All right. What do we got here? Let's break Marquan in, you know. You can do your news story, which I believe has something to do with Foghorn Leghorn and anime.
I never would have expected this to be a thing, but apparently Eric Bauza, the new voice for Foghorn Leghorn, is trying to join the anime community, Which, I mean, I always find it interesting to see celebrities and voice actors actually express an interest in anime, despite it being more mainstream now. It's always fun to see memes get when they get take part in memes with the rest of the community. So with this one, it looks like... So should I just read this off because...
You can summarize it, you can read it, whatever. Makes it better for you.
All right, I'll just go ahead and read it then. One of the memorable Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies characters is Foghorn Leghorn. The often bombastic prankster and sometimes his mentor is known for his rivalry with Barnyard Dog and generally causing some trouble on the farm he lives on. But what would happen if Foghorn were to interact with someone outside of his farm? There haven't been many instances in the cartoons, most well-known probably being the Space Jam movies, until he became a viral meme star recently. And on April 24th, the current voice actor of Foghorn, Eric Bauza, joined the fray by posting 3 videos of Foghorn interacting with some anime characters. The first one had me cracking up when I saw it. I did not expect it. It's him talking to Vegeta after he just basically gets clapped. And it's just him laying in the dirt and Foghorn basically holding his hand screaming. It's hilarious. The caption is, "Boy, I say boy, your final flash ain't nothing more than a flash in the pan, boy. You missed it. It flew right over me. You couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with a blast like that, boy. No wonder you called a Saiyan. All talk and nothing else. Now pay attention when I'm talking to you." And I can honestly say that's hilarious. Like, just see it. One, Vegeta is always getting clapped and always talking smack. So this character commenting on it is one of the funniest things I've seen for anime meme culture in the past week or so, at least. The next one is Frieren. Can't say enough about Frieren. The caption on that one is, I say, young lady, life is a precious thing. A human's got a lifespan of a dang mayfly compared to the vast ocean you got. I say, you gotta enjoy the little things in life. It's not too late for a great mage like you. I say, you gotta cherish the time you got." That one wasn't as funny as the Vegeta one. It was confusing to see them talk about Frieren. But, I mean, Frieren's popular, so it's memed quite often. And the last one is another Dragon Ball Z one. It's him next to Goku flexing. And it's, "Boy, I say boy, I understand you've been enjoying this fight, but this ain't no game, boy. That no good fella Frieza just killed your best friend. Now it's time to quit playing around and show that dirty villain what happens to folks who take life for granted." So basically it was right after Frieza killed Krillin, and he's about to go Super Saiyan. But again, funniest one out of the bunch for me was the Vegeta one, because it's always funny, him being the Prince of All Saiyans and constantly getting clapped, but constantly talking smack too. But I think it was fun seeing them, seeing a voice actor get into the anime community like this. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it's really funny. The Vegeta one is by far the funniest one.
Yeah.
My only problem is, like, his voice ain't right. Like, I know he's the official voice actor, but it don't sound right.
Not the same.
It's not the same as the we talked about this right before we started podcasting, but it's like a lot of the voices for like Looney Tunes characters and Muppets and whatever, the persons have retired or died. So it's not, you do the best you can, but like, it doesn't sound right. Like, it doesn't,
yeah.
This guy, he's not hitting the, I say boy.
That was a big part of my childhood where my mom and I would constantly like repeat and do stuff in his voice. And it don't hit the same. It just doesn't.
I mean, I applaud this guy for trying. He's doing his best, yeah. And it's funny that he got in on this. I wish we could get somebody AI the original voice and get him to do it. Also, I love that the fucking dog that was in all of his cartoons is named Barnyard Dog. They didn't name the character. I feel terrible for that character. Now it is the fucking giant chicken beat his ass all the time.
Yep.
His name is Barnyard Dog.
No respect.
It's like naming your cat House Cat.
Nice and easy to remember.
That's true. That's true. You never forget his name.
I think there's a Garfield joke about that. It was an early Garfield joke. When is it John still had like the roommate or whatever?
Oh, fuck, that's way back.
Oh yeah, it was. It was like he talks about like, "Oh yeah, we had cats growing up. Let's see, we call them cat, and cat." And, like, John's getting this look like, "You call them all cats?" He's like, "Figured, why bother giving a name to something that won't come when you call it?"
That is fair. You know, I can't argue with that as an owner of cats. Yeah, exactly. You know that? Did you know that a cat's ears have 38 different individual muscles they can use to ignore you?
What?
Fucking cats. They you'll yell their name.
Tell us about your cats, Rick.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you'll yell their name like from 5 inches away, and they won't turn around. But you touch that bag of food, and they'll hear you from across the universe. Anyway, let's move on. It is fun when memes kind of go official like that. And you know what? I think Dragon Ball Z would be improved with the inclusion of, like, Bugs Bunny.
Absolutely.
Let's get some Bugs Bunny going in there.
Maybe some Looney Tunes violence in DBZ. Absolutely. I'm all game for it.
I'd maybe watch it then.
All right. So, Doc, you've got some terrible news to break to everybody.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but this is truly, truly tragic. Studio Gohan, sir, everyone's favorite purveyor of the worst animation in the world ever, has revealed an original anime project called Momentary Lily that's premiering in January 2025 next year. I mean, I guess at least they're not ruining our beloved manga this time, like they did recently. But honestly, this studio, I don't know what's wrong with these people. Everything they make is the most horribly oversaturated colours, bizarre colour gradients, weird misuse of CG. I think they abuse the computers to make this. They force them to do things they were never, ever meant to do. And I feel that, I mean, it's good that they've given us an adequate warning about this so we know that we can avoid it. But Gohan, someone please, please stop them.
Please make it stop.
Yeah.
You're right, though. At least they didn't take a manga that people like and make a show people can't stand to watch this time.
Yeah. I've watched only a couple of their things now, and they're just so weird. Like, I watched Coppelion not too long ago as part of a sort of retrospective of what was showing, and I think it must have been 2023. You know, that show seemed interesting, but every episode, like, gave me a migraine. And K was kind of interesting, but just looked awful.
See, I liked K. I really liked K, but it looked very weird.
Yeah.
And that was like the most normal of their stuff. That was before we got to like Handshakers, and they started doing like that weird constant shaky cam and lens flare shit.
Yeah, I can't watch that. I watched the trailer for that. And I was like, hell no. There's no way.
It made me literally ill. Like, I literally got, like, I'm not joking, I got motion sickness from watching it. Like, I felt nauseous.
Yeah, I'm all for media being challenging, but that's not the kind of challenging that I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think they went out of their way to like, present their anime as the bigger the motions, the bigger the reaction for the fandom. Like, but it's not a good reaction. Like, I think they, the bigger they go, the more people will like it. It's not working.
Yeah. Hyperemesis or horrific vomiting is not the reaction they're going for. But then, you know, there was also the relatively recent Tokyo Babylon thing where they were going to be making an adaptation of Clamp's manga, which already had a sort of two-volume OVA thing in the 1990s, which I really like.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
But they had to stop making it because they were accused of plagiarism. In a way, I'm kind of glad because they didn't ruin something that I love. But now it looks like Tokyo Babylon's not getting a new anime, so which makes me sad.
Yeah, I'm glad that they got knocked off it, but I'm kind of sad that now it's not going to happen because I love Tokyo Babylon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
part of the X 1999 universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good, and like, you know, you and me and the rest of the olds remember that OVA. Nobody else does.
Yeah. I think I recorded it off of late night television, so I still have my ancient VHS tape of that somewhere.
That's probably hilarious. That's how I did too. I recorded it off like Encore or Stars or something back in like 1997.
Yeah. I probably still have the ad breaks in it as well.
Oh man. Oh well, Gohan's still doing stuff for some reason.
Yeah, we can give him time though. Most likely ruin somebody else's childhood favorites.
No.
Enough time.
So that long gestation TV version of Akira that Katsuhiro Otomo keeps on teasing, you know, I just know that the monkey's paw will curl and it'll be studio. It's like, no!
No, no, it'll be Dean. Studio Dean, Akira on like a $300 animation budget.
That would still be better than Gohan's.
I don't know, dog. I mean, they have a show.
It's a low bar.
It's a low bar, but they're doing multiple shows this season, and one of them is just awful. Like, the show is fine, but the animation is so fucking bad.
Yeah, the animation is why I stopped watching it. I made it made it through the first episode, and I was good on that one.
Yeah, it's I keep watching it because, you know, I watched Isekai Fantasy Trash, but it's the anime is so rough. Like these people have never heard of a walk cycle. Like they don't even try to stay on model. So sometimes I'm like, wait, which character is that? Because they got like a cubism thing going on. They got like a Picasso drew their anime models. It was, I'm like, holy shit, guys. It's like Dean, but it's not even like Dean's good team. It's like Dean's like third string.
The Dean D team.
Yeah. Oh
dear.
This is the double D team.
Now anyway. The double D team would be good, but.
Yeah, the double D team works on the high school DXD. Anyway, so Uemura, you also have an actual interesting news story that doesn't involve one of the worst studios ever or Foghorn Leghorn.
Funny you should say that, considering, you know, what's usually involved in that affair, you know, involves all the worst studios ever, but because it involves the Oscars. So, but yeah, they have announced that they are opening up films, I should say, can now be submitted for both the international feature category and the animated feature category. So, you know, I've had various anime films in the past where you got to pick, do you want it to go in the, you know, the animated category where you're up against the Disney juggernauts, or you want to, you know, try your luck in the international category. But
now you can at least... the upcoming Chainsaw Man movie could win not only best animated film, best foreign film, but also best picture, because that would just be amazing.
I think they still ban animated pictures. Back in 1993, Beauty and the Beast got nominated for Best Picture, and they changed the rules after that, so animated films could not win that. So unless they change that rule, and it's entirely possible I've missed it, the animated films cannot be nominated for Best Picture.
Damn it.
It's bullshit, but what are you going to do?
Justice for Chainsaw Man.
I'd be stunned if that even got nominated, to be honest with you. For best animated, like, you know. I guess, did Demon Slayer get nominated? I don't think it did, right?
I don't think so.
And it made a crap load of money over here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's kind of a Hobson's choice for the, you know, when they want to submit a movie over here. Because if you submit it, like you said, if you submit it to animated, then it has to go up against Pixar and DreamWorks and the guys who out, you know, market you. If they put it in the international film section, then it gets runs into the prejudice against animated movies.
Yep.
Which, if you're Miyazaki and you're doing Boy and the Heron, you might be able to overcome. Like a regular animated movie probably can't do that.
Yeah.
So this is good. You know, like Boy and the Heron might have been able to take both if it had been nominated for both. I haven't actually seen it, but I've heard it's quite good.
Right. Yeah. And one other thing with it for, I'm not sure. Who cares? But maybe it'll improve things for certain people of our listenership. They're also the Oscars. I think this is a general. Say they're adding the Dallas-Fort Worth area to the list of qualifying cities in the U.S. that a film must have at least a 1 week theatrical run in to qualify for awards consideration. That joins L.A. County, the City of New York, the Bay Area, Chicago, Miami, and Atlanta. They're expanding theatrical eligibility requirements for its best picture category, so it's got to be an expanded 7-day theatrical run in 10 of the top 50 U.S. markets, no later than 45 days after the initial release. And then...
Yeah, they're just trying to make it harder to get nominated.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's not such a bad thing. Maybe you know.
No, it's probably
slightly
better.
Less art house Oscar bait flicks and slightly more things that most people actually cared about seeing.
Yeah, you'll get less like you know movies that 5,000 people in New York and LA saw, you know, getting nominated for Best Picture. But I'm kind of surprised Dallas wasn't already on the list.
Right? You would think they would have been.
Like if I was going to name like the 10 biggest cities in America, I mean, Dallas probably come up. You got the biggest football stadium. Well, that's actually in Arlington.
Is it still the biggest?
I think so. Like, what's bigger than that?
Yeah, still the biggest. Everything's bigger in Texas, baby.
Gee, I wonder where Marquand's from. All right, and lastly, I think it'd be interesting to see where the effects of that do show up, like maybe next year or the year after. Lastly, there's a quick thing about, I thought this was interesting. It's not a huge news story or anything, but they actually pulled this down off Twitter now, but it was already been captured by the internet, that My Anime List revealed which anime series from the 2020s has the most, well, they say most popular, but really it's the most members. How many members have listed it as a show they watched? So that doesn't make it the most popular, it just makes it the most watched, which I think the headline is a little bit of a misnomer, but it's still interesting. So this is going to stun you to discover that Jujutsu Kaisen is the most popular or most watched anime, according to My Anime List of the 2020s. 2.5 million members have that on their My Anime Lists, followed by Spy Family or Spy X Family, depending who you are. Chainsaw Man at 1.5, Horimiya at 1.3. I was very excited to see Horimiya on this list. Unfortunately, Mushoku Tensei. Tokyo Revengers, 1.2. I forgot that was really popular, at least the first season or so.
Well, then they stuck it, and they know.
Yeah, they stuck it on Hulu, and it disappeared. My Dress Up Darling at 1.05.
Love seeing that.
That's nice.
And then here you go, Doc, at just under a million. It's Rent a Girlfriend. Now these last two are infuriating.
I have shame to admit that one of those is me for watching like two episodes, but
I mean, if it's on a list, it's on a list. These last two are kind
I'm
of
on a list. It's probably not the first one.
Oh, dude, I'm on so many lists. I don't even use incognito mode anymore. I just like let the FBI have my stuff. Anyway, these last two, as I said, these bother me. What are you going to do? Number 9 is Tower of God at 923,000, and at number 10 is God of High School at 909,000. I'm like, you people should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah,
that's surprising. Not really. I can't say that. I'm not surprised.
I mean, Crunchyroll. They're both Crunchyroll originals, so they hyped them really hard.
Yeah.
But they're both so bad. Like God of High School. Yeah, I'll admit, I kind of
on a list.
I kind of enjoyed God of High School. Like everybody got pissed at it because it went completely off the rails. But I found its complete lunacy kind of amusing by the end when God is stabbing the city and stuff. But it's not a good show, and Tower of God is just bad. The problem with Tower of God is that they focus the story is focused on the wrong character. Like the least interesting guy is the main character, which is always death for a show. You know, you got the blue haired kid right there; he's way more interesting. But let's let the story be about him. But whatever. So there you go. Jujutsu Kaisen, 2.5 million people. That's probably why it won all the Crunchyroll awards.
Yeah,
even the ones it didn't deserve, which were all of them. I'm not bitter or anything about it. I'm bitter.
I was happy to see Horimiya in My Dress Up Darling, though.
I'm stunned to see Horimiya on that list. I mean, I'm thrilled because I love that show. It's probably my favorite rom-com ever, or close. But it's I didn't expect to see that. I don't remember that much conversation around it, to be honest with you.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, that one's a little surprising.
And that was a pleasant surprise. And then there's Tower of God and God of High School. I mean, I shouldn't be surprised because, you know, how hard they merged. Like I said, it's not popularity necessarily. It's how many people watched it.
I'm surprised that Rent a Girlfriend isn't higher, honestly. Didn't have more people watching that.
But I mean, there are people in our community. I'm looking at you, Luigi, who continue to watch that for reasons that escape me. Naming and shaming you, Luigi. All right, let's move on to shows we're watching. Let's start with Doc. You just saw, I think you just came back from like yesterday, right? The new Spy X Family movie.
Yeah, well, Spy Family, yeah. Yeah, it was great.
There's an X there. If I'm not supposed to say the X, why is it there?
Well, you don't say the X in Hunter Hunter either, do you? So,
I actually do.
Well, okay.
Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, yeah. Has anyone else seen it, or was it just me?
I didn't get my tickets in time, unfortunately.
Oh. No, I haven't seen, sorry.
Well, it's fun. It's really good. It's basically just like an extra long episode of the TV show, which is kind of what you expect. Just with incredibly good animation. And sometimes you see these movies and like the animation is maybe a little bit better than the show. Like Spy Family already looks pretty good, but the animation quality in this is spectacular. There are some just incredible action scenes in this. And Yor gets to kick ass. I love her so much. She's like one of my favorite characters ever. There's this one particular scene where it's like, if you imagine like Marvel's War Machine and Black Widow fighting each other during the climax of the first Captain America movie with like this big Zeppelin thing exploding all around them. It's like that. It's good.
Nice.
It's very funny as well. Yeah. And it's funny. It's a little bit too long. It doesn't need to be 110 minutes long. They could have cut 20 minutes out of it and it would have been a bit tighter. But it is really good for like newcomers. It explains the entire premise at the beginning. So anyone who hasn't even seen the TV show can easily catch up with what it's about. And the TV show has minimal continuity anyway. Like, stuff happens, but it never impacts the status quo in any way. So this movie could happen at any point during the TV show, just about, and it would fit in just fine. And it's a lot of fun. It's got some slightly unsettling bits in it.
Yeah, I heard an awful lot of jokes about poop.
Oh, yeah. There is a poop god.
Okay.
Which, that scene comes out of absolutely nowhere. Anya swallows, that's the little pink-haired girl, she swallows this chocolate truffle that has a secret microfilm in it, because, you know, every spy movie has to have a microfilm. So in order to get it out of her, the bad guys have to wait until she poops. So she doesn't want to poop the microfilm out. So she's like trying really, really hard to keep it in. And for like a 4 or 5 year old child, that's actually quite a difficult thing to do. And she becomes so delirious that she starts to hallucinate the god of poop, who comes to try and tell her that, you know, it's okay to let it all out. It's just ridiculous.
Okay, well, you sold me now.
It's absolutely insane. I went with a friend who doesn't really watch anime and has never seen Spy Family, and he sort of turned to me during the scene. He's like, "Is it always like this?"
Well, not quite. I mean, I don't remember poop gods before.
But it is now very much a thing.
There was like an 1100 episode arc of On the Boat last season I wasn't real fond of.
But you didn't like that one?
Oh. I didn't dislike it, but it was too long for me. I was like, this could have been 3 episodes.
So if you imagine that was all crammed together in a film, it would be fairly similar kind of a vibe to what this is. So I don't know, if you didn't like that, you might not like this. It takes a wee while to get going. I think it could have been tightened up a bit at the beginning, but once once all the craziness starts happening, it's wall to wall action at the end. It's really good fun. I like it a lot.
Is the dog in it? Does he go borf?
Of course, he goes borf to your heart's content.
Okay, well then I'm in.
I think you would enjoy this film, Reg. I think you would like it. I think you'd have to have basically no heart not to like this film.
Oh, so Gugsy wouldn't like it?
No. Who knows what Gugsy likes and doesn't like?
He hates dogs. We discovered that last episode.
Yeah.
He's a monster who hates animals, especially things that are cute.
Probably shouldn't ever guide your decisions based on what Gugsy likes or doesn't like. That leads you into trouble.
It's a solid life, a piece of life advice, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, Doc, I was you said right before we started recording that you saw one episode of Mission Yozakura family. So obviously you love it as much as I do, right?
I saw it and I thought it was okay. I'll probably watch some more. I've seen quite a lot of fairly positive stuff online about it, about people enjoying it.
Yeah, because it's really good.
All right. It has some quite fun character designs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Her whole family is hysterical. And it just gets funnier as it goes. Like, it's a wacky family kind of comedy. And it's kind of old school in its design. It kind of reminds me of Astronaut a little bit, where it feels older than it is.
Yeah, it does have a kind of retro kind of feel to it, which I'm fine with.
But I really enjoy it. And speaking of Astronaut, UMR guy says that you dropped Astronaut, which is one of Doc's favorite shows this season. What's up with that?
Yeah, I did notice that older, God, what do we call it? Not vibe, art style, you know, kind of thing, which I'm, you know, obviously clearly assuming was clearly intentional, but the comedy and whatever just wasn't quite hitting for me. So it was almost there, but just not enough. And
I've never been so disappointed in my life.
Really? How many episodes did you get in?
It was the first one. It wasn't doing it for me.
Oh, the second episode's much better, though. It's definitely worth watching the second episode, too.
I'll see if I can circle back around, but yeah.
Seriously, and then if you don't like the second episode, you probably aren't going to get on with the rest of the show. But the first episode doesn't really even get into the main premise of what this show's about.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't really set the hook until that second episode.
No. It's delightful. I love this. And I really love the main character girl. I think she's so cute.
Doc likes pink-haired anime character. This is news to everybody.
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, I think also, vibe is a good word, but actually it's not just the art style, it's the construction, it's the setup. Mm. The setup is extremely 80s. Like we said last episode, it's basically a updated version of Meisokaku mixed with, Urusei Yatsura. You know, it feels extremely Takahashi. It's very... Yeah. I think it's like it was designed to appeal to old people like me and Doc.
It's anime original, which I didn't realize. I thought it must have been based on a manga or something, but it's not. So it must be a very deliberate homage.
I assume so, yes. It's obviously made by somebody who also remembers those shows and wants to kind of bring it back.
Mm-hmm. And they keep on adding new characters with each episode, as a lot of these shows do tend to do. Certainly the Takahashi shows do that a lot. But the new characters are all quite fun and add a new kind of wrinkle to the premise. I don't really want to spoil it too much, but the characters are amusing.
It's something about especially the first episode, the reliance on the other characters in the house just keep popping up out of nowhere on the guy that, like...
Really? That's one of my favorite parts.
That sort of stuff.
But it also got really old to me real fast for whatever reason. Right. I don't know.
Well, I mean, this slows down a little bit because they're doing that to introduce the characters and kind of set their gimmicks.
Yeah.
But then as episodes go on, you get to, like, explore those characters a little bit more. So it's... But yeah, the wacky cast is kind of the whole core of it. Like, all the people in the house who keep getting in the way of the romance storyline. the unemployed guy fucking kills me.
I love it. It's so funny. Oh, man, he is so funny.
And at least there's no, like, constant domestic violence, like, back in the day. Like, nobody's getting hit with a paper fan that gets pulled out of, pocket dimension. Anyway. Let's see what else we got that everybody's watching. So, Marquand, are you watching Train to the End of the World?
Yeah, I'm not caught up on it, though. I didn't watch the most recent episode.
No, but all of us are watching it. That's great because it's my number one favorite show of this season. My second favorite is Mission Yozakura Family, but number one is Train to End the World because it is extremely weird in the best possible way.
Yeah. That most recent episode is fantastic. Is it episode 4? I don't really want to spoil it for anyone who's not watched it, but it is just properly bonkers. It's all these crazy things just sort of happen. And I mean, they don't really explore any of the crazy things too much because it's, again, this is about the kind of the vibes, like the world has gone nuts. Like they keep traveling through all these very, very strange places where the world has gone wrong in one or two very specific ways. I don't know what drugs they were taking to write this, but I'd quite like to try some, or at least maybe be able to prescribe some.
I think they borrowed the drugs from PA Works after they made Akiba Maid Wars.
Oh.
That was just amphetamine.
That was good shit.
Yeah, that was just a show on speed. This show is definitely on some of that good shit you find in the woods.
No, that was episode 3.
Yeah, I know. Like, I was like, this show's it's a hat on a hat now. There's literal mushrooms in the show.
Right, I'm never looking at mushrooms in quite the same way again after that. The mushroom people.
It reminds me of some ways. Like there are other shows that like Flip Flappers. It kind of reminds me of that when they, because how it kind of dances on this line between comedy and horror.
Yeah.
Hopefully it sticks the landing a little better. I like Flip Flappers. I thought it didn't quite. It only got about an 8 on the landing.
Well, yeah, it didn't.
Lost its main writer halfway through.
Right. Yeah, and you can really feel it.
Yeah.
But like the best episodes of Flip Flappers, that's what Train feels like. Like all these like bizarre places where the weirdest shit happens.
It's like Flip Flappers mixed with Girls' Last Tour. It's like that.
Yeah, I can see that.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely Girls' Last Tour. Just way less depressing.
Yeah, so far.
That's what I was hesitant about to start with was the, you know, the potential depressing vibes without knowing more about it. And then.
Yeah, that's how they get you with the cutesy designs, and then now you're depressed.
Yeah.
That was the weird thing.
As much as I did, though. Or as much as I do.
What, Train or Girls' Last Tour?
Train. It was a surprise.
Well, I mean, when we previewed it on the preview podcast, it was really hard to predict what you were getting. Mm. You know, and then that first episode is just madness.
My one minor complaint was the plot of the third episode was sort of predictable. You know, the rough idea.
But it was fun getting there.
Yeah.
Also, that this is another episode. This is another anime with great dog, like a high quality dog.
Yes. Yes. Also, third contender for best dog.
Best boy. Yeah.
Yep.
Also best a contender in Mission Yozakura Family. Not to keep bringing that show up, but it has a great dog too.
Mm-hmm. It's just a great show.
It is. But yeah, this is probably going to be unless they completely like we've seen Train based anime go off the rails. I'm pausing there for the effect. Before, that one involved zombies, so this one, I think, we'll probably have zombies at some point, actually. I guess the mushroom people kind of...
Oh, there's... friend, you know, fellow annotator Rasaj, was the one who was showing it to me last night, and yeah, he pulled up after the... Not to get too much spoilers, but if you look at the map that they are given in the second episode, wherever that was, clearly foreshadowing and yeah, it definitely looked like zombies somewhere.
Yeah, the map turned out to be accurate. I noticed that. Yeah. And they pulled it out in the last episode. I'm like, oh, they actually are hitting all these. By the way, Duck Boat Guy, one of my favorite characters so far.
Yes. I'm actually mildly worried. You talk about, you know, going off the rails or train wreck or whatever, you know, pun you want to go for. I was noticing there's a break in the line at one point. And I won't say where if anybody hasn't actually seen it yet. But on that map, there's some kind of weird break. So.
Oh, dear.
Well, I mean, like, the tracks behind them got, like, twisted up and destroyed and flooded. So I was like, well, how are you guys going to get back? But I guess no one's worrying about that yet.
Yeah, I don't understand how they can still communicate with the guy back in their hometown, you know, by hitting the rails with a hammer like they're doing when those rails are all broken.
It's 7G, baby.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
It's like, you're looking for, like, consistent logic in a show with mushroom people.
It's a train that requires overhead catenary lines for power that doesn't actually.
There's no lines.
Yeah, there's no lines. So I was trying to decide if they were just being lazy or if it was actually doesn't need them because 7G.
Yeah.
I assume they must have kept them for as a joke because it's really funny how they're out there and there's no fucking lines.
Yeah.
And by the way, the old man turning back, the train conductor turning back into the old man going choo-choo shouldn't make me laugh every time, and it fucking does. I don't know why.
I'm crying laughing every time that happens. And you know it's going to happen, but it's still hilarious.
Yes. It's like you see the joke coming a mile off, and it's still funny.
Yeah.
I can't even explain it. It's just old man yelling choo-choo is funny.
I did sort of appreciate that. They didn't explain. Was it like late in the first episode? She's like, "Oh, I solved the mystery of the hat," and then they just keep going. She doesn't even talk about it until like the next episode or whatever that was. So I kind of appreciated that. You know,
the show doesn't slow down to explain things very often because it doesn't want to. It just wants to be wacky and move on. That's my favorite part, is when they pull up to the station and like shit happens and they leave. And it's just that little part. Like, I love those little segments like that. And then now we're like, I was going to compare it to like Gulliver's Travels, but then that got kind of literal in the most recent episode. So I'll save that. Mm-hmm. But that's what it feels like. It feels like just the most like insane road trip movie ever. It's like what traveling on a train in Japan is like if you're really, really high. I assume. It tracks. Hey!
Fear and Loathing in Agana.
I'd watch it. We can't go in here. This is Bat-chan territory. Okay. That's moving on. I love that one. Hey, moving on. I would like to talk to my good friend here, Marquand, about a show that none of you guys have bothered to watch, but I think is great. It's a studio apartment, good lighting, angel included. It's very silly. It's kind of a classic like harem setup, and he's like, "Oh look, all the girls are secretly something else, except his one friend who's down bad for him." She's so down bad that it's really funny.
I wasn't sure about this one. Talk to us, Marquand. Convince me.
Look, man,
tell him, Marquand, or do you even like it? Actually,
great time with this. I'll be honest. It's one of my favorites. I'm a sucker for harems because the war for best girl is always entertaining in the anime community, so I'm always down to see who likes who and why. But this one is so funny because it kind of reminds me of I can't remember the name of it, where the teacher had a bunch of like supernatural students, and there was a gym teacher who was like a succubus or something like that. But it's
it was like Life with monster girls.
It's kind of like that, just as wholesome.
Demi-chan. Yep,
there we go. But each of the characters somehow is going to be a supernatural creature, and of course they're going to be into the main character because harem rules. But the angel, super adorable. I love her. You get to see her learn about humanity through the connections that are supernatural creatures, and just learning how they try to modernize, like, not just Japanese folklore, but just folklore for supernatural creatures in general. Just that part alone makes me want to see who's going to be what in the upcoming episodes with the girls that are going to be joining the harem. But it's just so freaking cute, man. And then every episode, you just feel worse and worse for the childhood friend, because like every new girl that gets added is going to put her lower down in contention to be with the dude. And it's just so hilarious because she just loves him. It's always funny to me when I see like childhood friends like fall in love over the smallest things. But it's just every episode you get, she's like, "Oh, maybe I can make a lunch for him today. Oh, he already has that. Oh, maybe I can be a really close friend to him. Oh, he already has a new best friend," or something like that. It's so cute, man. You got to watch it. Supernatural girls, childhood friends pining but never winning. You can't lose. Can't lose with it.
Well, we don't know she's not going to win. Sometimes the childhood friend wins.
I don't
know. The childhood friend won in Shuffle.
How many years ago?
She beat out the demon and angel princesses, if I remember correctly.
I don't see that.
Of course, she actually had magic, too. So but she's still a childhood friend.
Yeah, let us not speak of the implications of the anime adaptation of Bokuben, though.
Yeah, I don't need to go into that. But, How's it
compare to, say, Invaders of the Roku Geoma? Because I loved that one.
I will say there's similar energy there. I think this is better. I think Rokujama, like, first of all, I thought that kind of petered out after like about a halfway point. And also all those characters were like really tropes. These characters, especially the girl who's a Yuki Onna, she's not like a full-on Yukiona, like, living in the mountains, capturing people. She just happens to have ice powers, which is, by the way, like, the fifth anime that's done that now. There's at least three or four other. There was Ice Guy and his female colleague was just all about a male Yukiona, which doesn't actually make any sense, but whatever.
Yeah.
But he, Marquand's right. It's unrelentingly cute. Like, he's very, like, you get, he's like the classic male harem protagonist who's just, he's super nice. So everybody likes him. To be fair, he is extremely adaptable. Like, an angel shows up.
It's so great. I would not have.
An angel rocks up on
as quickly as he did. He just started rolling with the punches.
He's like, yeah, okay. Angel shows up on his balcony, wants to move in. He's like, all right, fine. Angels are real. Heaven's real. I'm totally fine with that. I'll just go on with my life. A girl at my work is a snow woman from mythology. Sure, I'll just go to the library and find some books about it. I'm cool. The ramifications of heaven actually existing doesn't bother him at all. So it's, I don't know. It is really, really cute. And I think I'm glad Mark Wan was watching it because I didn't think I was going to be able to talk about it on the podcast. Nobody else is fucking watching it.
I have a great time.
Yeah. Maybe I'll see if I can get it in there. So I was trying to look for a few more for this season. It's just trying to figure out what sounded more interesting.
If you like, well, it's not super interesting, but if you like, you know, chill, amusing stuff, it's right there. It's that kind of feel good anime kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was looking for. So,
I also really liked like how early everybody got revealed.
Yep,
they didn't do like 8 episodes before everybody figured out what everybody else was.
Yeah, I think in one episode, like minor spoilers, but they just admitted with each other. So I was like, eh, let's get everything out open. Perfect.
She just blurts it out like, "Oh, are you going?" I'm like, "Wait, what?"
My favorite. That's a selling point in its favor for me because sometimes we got to keep hiding all this stuff sometimes annoys the heck out of me. So
yeah, it's like actually I am that show Watashiwa or whatever.
And yeah,
that took way too long to get to the point.
I still enjoyed it though.
Yeah,
definitely.
But that's still a good show.
One of the things I like to on a completely different type the was it Iroduku one another I want to say that was another PA Works one where the girl gets sent back in time by magic and like maybe about an episode she's kind of sort of hiding it from the other people at the high school and then it's just kind of comes out and it's like, oh well, okay, there it is. Yeah, they do magic, she's been sent back in time, cool, everybody moves on with life. I'm like, nice.
It reminds me of an episode of Justice League Unlimited. They go back to the Old West and they find Jonah Hex. And Jonah Hex is like, "You guys are from the future, right?" And they're like, "How do you know about that?" He goes like, "I've had a very interesting life." It's one of my favorite moments. All right. Well, anyway, please watch that. Especially if you like silly. It's not even like, it's not, the harem elements are actually not that big a deal. It's not even the main thrust of the show. It's mostly slice of life with a very silly cast. So, why are you guys feeling about this season of Konosuba? Is it living up to your expectations? Is the show dropping off a little bit?
I'm not disappointed at all. I'm a huge Konosuba fan. It's one of my favorite comedies. It's not as funny as the earlier seasons. Like, season one was peak for me, but, I mean, it's not bad. But it's not the best Konosuba has been, but I'm still following it, though. I'm enjoying it.
It's funny. The most recent episode wasn't that great, but that's because most of the cast was hardly in it. But the first two episodes of the season were really funny, I thought. And I like that the movie is actually part of the continuity, and it should be really important to what's come up. Yeah. I quite like the film.
Well, the movie was great.
Yeah.
Yep. That they are still some great face game though.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's still a flawless reaction GIF show.
Yeah.
There's so many every episode. It's like 100.
Yeah.
VAs constantly give 100%, and it's so funny. Like just noticing or just realizing how talented they are because the way they go from 0 to 100, mm-hmm. it's crazy.
They haven't pushed as much, but for the first episode, we still got the classic hi, Kazuma Des. Yelling, Kazuma!
I fucking love that joke. Kazuma! Kazuma! Yes, I'm Kazuma.
Yeah. You're talking about the VA killing it. Just totally perfectly knows how to nail that, you know, like they're carrying on. He's just like, hi, Cosmo Des, as he's going.
What do you think about this whole storyline with the princess? I don't want to be like negative because I'm still laughing at it, especially the first episode with Tranquility Girl, which I thought was really, really funny.
Yeah.
I don't understand where this is going so much, and I'm finding it less funny. But I mean, you're in the third season plus a movie plus a spinoff, so maybe it just can't be as funny. But I'm finding it somewhat less amusing. I don't get this whole thing with the princess. I'd rather them just go get eaten by frogs or something. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
When in doubt, bring in the frogs.
Like cutting... that's what the ending's for. I think it's the ending, isn't it?
Yeah.
Konosuba is the master of the cut joke, where like they're doing something, and then it cuts to like them having to rescue Kazuma or Aqua or something from a frog or out of a pit, or Kazuma died again. I love that kind of
Megumin's kind of exploded joke, right? Something.
Yeah, Megumin did explosion. Never not funny, by the way.
Just the her falling out,
dropping a nuke on a problem that didn't require it.
Did she just pass?
Okay. I said never not funny. It wasn't very funny in the spinoff.
As much as I love Megumin, she needed the rest of the cast to bounce off of, unfortunately. I still watched it.
Yeah, I still watched it too, but I don't think any of the characters would work on their own, honestly. It's the four of them together that makes it funny.
Yes. Hello. Yeah, someday I want to catch more up with the source material again, but...
Well, Ray Zeno, anyway, is always telling me that the source material was crap. Like, the show was way better than the source material. That's what he said. I don't know.
I don't know. Some of the stuff I read was whatever. I think I mentioned before, but one of the ones I remember reading is, like, he's in the big guild hall or whatever it is, where everybody is, and one of the guys is, like, giving, like, oh, you always get to go all around with all these, hot girls or whatever, like, so let me go for a day. And Cosmo's like, yeah, fine, go for it. And so, like, this guy goes off with, Aqua, Darkness, and Megumin for the day, and Cosmo goes with this guy's party, and Cosmo's surprisingly competent. Like, he uses his stuff, like, bots traps, uses his the little low-level magic spells he's kind of picked up to do different things, basically, elemental kind of stuff. And, like I said, he's competent in the party, and he has a good time. He's like, it's not crazy, I'm not, having to do weird rescue things. I'm, not having people half blow me up or any of that kind of stuff. And so he has a pretty good day. And then I get back to the guild hall. I'm like, the Aqua and the original guy, come like dragging back in. And this poor guy is like wrecked. He's like, oh my God.
Yeah. They should do that in the show.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a predictable joke. You see what's going to happen, but it'd still be funny.
Right. It was a nice looking, here's Kazuma, and he's actually semi-competent, and not just, whatever.
No, you think Kazuma could probably be a decent adventurer if he wasn't, saddled with three of the biggest morons on the planet.
Yeah.
But then his own bad habits get him in trouble all the time, too, so.
I think maybe the three of them sort of drive his bad habits to their extremes as well.
Absolutely. They all make each other worse. It's great.
Yeah.
I just like in the movie where Cosmo immediately turns on them when big boobs are presented.
That movie had me cracking up.
All right. The movie was really funny.
Yes.
Yeah, I also liked it's another hint, the advanced technology of the thing is hinting at a ruined society kind of thing, where it's actually post-apocalyptic in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Which fantasy anime seem to be really fond of these days. Banished from the Heroes Party, I Live in the Countryside, that show is constantly dropping that exact same hint. The ancient elves are obviously just advanced humans, but they don't understand what computers are. So that gets me. Okay, so I would like to move on and complain about that time I was reincarnated as a slime season 3.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to complain that it's called season 3 when there's been 500 bits of side content. The two OVAs and everything could have just been a season. I don't know why they just didn't do that. But also, it's been boring as fuck. And I have defended this show against other people complaining about it. Docs constant accusations of war crimes.
It's true, though. But anyway.
Legitimate military target. They just stand around talking. It's Legends of the Galactic Heroes. It's three episodes so far this season of people standing in rooms of talking. I can't fucking stand. Somebody fucking blow some. Somebody throw a pie.
It's so boring. I just want to drop it now, which is a shame because I kind of enjoy slime. But like the last couple of episodes, I just wanted to fall asleep. I just don't care. There's too many characters, and they all just stand around talking to each other, and I don't give a shit about anything they're talking about.
I mean, at least when it's ended like,
after the first season.
The second season was pretty good. Mm-hmm. And Slime Diaries was great. Like the spinoff was my favorite part of it so far. Mm-hmm. But like,
Diaries is good.
Yeah, these characters work really well in like a slice of life comedy setting, almost more than they do here. But it's like when it's Remy Roo and his people, it's kind of okay because there's some jokes in there. Mm-hmm. Especially like Veldora's like, "What should I do?" He's like, "You sit there and do nothing." He's like, "Great." But when it's all the other scheming characters and nobody's being funny, I'm like, I don't fucking care. And I could do with it for an episode. It was three episodes mm-hmm. so far, and they're setting up conflict, so I want to hang in because I know we're gonna get some sweet battle scenes. Rimuru is obviously gonna fight the Japanese girl. It's gonna happen. It's gonna be probably pretty awesome. But like, can we please fucking get to it?
They could have just cut these episodes, and nothing of value would have been lost.
Like they could have done like just one episode of it, and then like some of this stuff, we could have just gotten to the fights, and then maybe flashed back to the conversations like real quick,
maybe,
or something. The three episodes of this can't like they just don't. Why are you doing this to me?
Yeah,
and like I don't want to drop the show. I've watched two seasons plus a spinoff plus two OVAs. It's like I want to hang in there, but like you guys have to like get me something. Somebody's got to punch somebody.
But it's not like it's even presented or directed in an interesting way. It's not. It's people sitting around a table talking. There have been plenty of anime that have made those kind of scenes engaging and interesting through the use of weird camera angles, strange lighting, dynamic camera sort of stuff. But it's just, it's so boring.
You know what anime did really well at the sitting around the meeting table? Undead Unluck.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
Everything at the round table was fucking awesome.
That's something that's directed with creativity. Because slime is just... They're just putting what is on the page directly onto the screen with very little thought about how the audience might feel watching something that, you know, is probably taking pages and pages and pages of just turgid text and turned it into something boring. The audience does not find this interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. Hopefully, I'm hoping that we come back in 2 weeks or 4 weeks, where we're like, okay, so slime is improved. That is my hope. Yeah. We're going to get some sweet battle scenes or something funny, and then we'll be like, okay, everything's back to normal. But then, to be fair to slime, it doesn't have a talking, like, evil, smiling demon book to run its meetings.
No, that's true. But at the moment, slime is down at the absolute bottom of my list of things to watch, so I will only watch it when I've got nothing else left. It's teetering on being dropped.
That's an interesting idea. Like, what is my lowest priority show? What do I watch last? Probably Grandpa and Grandma Turn Young.
That's definitely my last one. The jokes that they have in that show, the Grandpa and Grandma Turn Young Again, It's icky, man. It just rubs me the wrong way. You got the granddaughter talking about how she wants to get with the granddad or the grandma too. It's just
ew. Weird. Why Japan? Why?
Yeah, it's okay. I wish they wouldn't do that because some of the other jokes are actually kind of funny sometimes.
It's just those kind of jokes when they bring those in. I'm like, why are we doing this?
I could see a. You know, damn, Gramps is really hot kind of thing, or, you know, and then you move on, but, you know.
Yeah, they haven't ever really moved on. Like, the fact that people think they're hot is, like, 90% of the humor.
Yep. Oh. Then you kind of get, like, the short flashes of, like, heartfelt moments between the two, the grandpa and the grandma. They go over, like, really emotional parts of their marriage. It's just the small things they do with each other, but other than that, it's just, can I get with grandma or grandpa? Because they're hot now.
Yeah, every once in a while, you're right. They touch on like how long these guys have actually been married, how hard their early life was, you know, and it's like how it's like a reward for them, a chance for them to you know have some more fun at the end of their life. I really wish the show dealt with those. It was less a gag comedy and more like dealt with what it would actually be like if you were like 90 or 80 or whatever, and suddenly you ate a golden apple and turned back into your early 20s. Which, if anybody wants to give me an apple that does that, I would love to be 21 again. But that could be interesting, and instead it's just kind of a gag. And honestly, if I was going to drop a show this season, it'd probably be this one.
I almost did drop. I don't think I watched the more recent episode of it, and I'm not sure if I will, honestly. But yeah, that's definitely at the bottom of my list, and I'm watching almost everything that's out this season.
Yeah, you're the only one whose list is anywhere near mine. Doc doesn't wade through the crap.
No.
But
I value the time of my life. Yeah.
There is a show that you're watching that I still really want Doc to watch. And that's Mysterious Disappearances, the show with the worst name.
That's a good one.
I love that show because it still is giving me huge, Dark Gathering vibes. Although it could be a little less etchy. There's a lot of focus on the main chick's tits, more than I would prefer.
Yep, and then it's the weird angles with the clothes change. It's definitely edgy. Or so I didn't expect
it's edgy, but because
it doesn't seem like the type of show that would need edgy elements involved. But
well, I mean, horror and edgy kind of those have gone together a number of times. It's always kind of there, but the thing is, the show is capable of being very actually legitimately creepy. That's why I'm sticking with it, because I actually like the characters, and I really liked how this last storyline played out. And when the show wants to be, it gets real fucking creepy. I really want Doc to watch it. You have to watch it, Doc.
It's on my list. I will proceed to watch as soon as I have time.
I mean, it's got young kids with creepy eyes, just like Dark Gathering. You know, they go on missions and looking for stuff that's, you know, haunted or otherwise a problem. The design language of the show, I really like how it looks. How they set stuff up. The things with the signs, I really like that as a visual thing. So I like that show. I just wish it had a less stupid name. It's not even like a good translation of the title. But whatever. Anyway. Anybody got anything else they want to talk about from this season? Nope.
I don't think anyone... Is anyone else watching Delicious in Dungeon?
I am, yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen the most recent episode?
Yeah, they're getting real serious now. It's not funny anymore.
Bloody hell. I was watching it thinking, where's my fun cooking show? There's so much blood.
Yeah, people just be dying everywhere now.
Maybe I should catch up. I didn't know it was going to get like that.
Oh no! From the switch over, basically, it's from the ending of the first kind of half to the second half. The show becomes dramatically more serious. Oh, wow. Like shit gets real.
I was tuning in for the weekly. So what are we cooking this week? That's what I was tuning in for.
I mean, they still do that, but it's not the focus anymore. You.
I mean, there is brutal body horror, horrific deaths, people having their skulls crushed into the ground, blood splattering everywhere. It's like, what's
up? I was really surprised for a second when they started whacking the one guy's expanded cast until I forgot that they can resurrect them. So I was like, holy shit, they just wiped out half the supporting character.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised that guy and his team have been, how relevant they are to the story now. I didn't expect them to expand the cast like that. Yeah, the show is I think people told me this. People who read the manga were like, no, it really accelerates from here. And they weren't fucking joking. The show went all gas, no brakes from the half point on.
Yeah. I mean, it's really good, but it's not kind of as relaxing and heartwarming anymore. It's more like, oh God, what's going to happen next?
Yeah, no, Mark One, if you wanted more like less cooking and more people dying horribly, you should get back into it.
Sounds like it's up my alley then.
it's great. And it's also
It looks so they're animating the hell out of it, but it doesn't look like a trigger show. You know what I'm saying? It's not wild and crazy or anything, but it's so done well.
It still has some of that trigger flair, though, especially in the action sequences and things. It looks really, really good.
It's so fluid.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just glad that Netflix is releasing it weekly and didn't like hold it back so we could watch it like next year or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I'll definitely catch up on it, though.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with everything from like the when they find her on. It's just like, holy shit, this is like, I didn't expect any of this shit.
My son and I watched this along with back to back with Laid Back Camp as a sort of a kind of chill out thing. Unfortunately, Delicious in Dungeon does not work as a chill out anymore because it just stresses me the hell out.
You're going to have to move that to a different category.
We watched that first and then calmed down with Laid Back Camp afterwards. Although the most recent episode of Laid Back Camp was also quite tense because it had some very high bridges.
Yeah, as a person afraid of heights, that episode made me very uncomfortable.
I've been watching it. So yeah. Good to know.
I was disappointed by my lack of relaxation this week.
Well, can I recommend Studio Apartment, Good Lighting, that'll Angel Included?
Maybe.
It's a very chill show.
It's funny though, because a lot of the shows this season are like that though, where it's less stakes for the shows. So I watch the intense ones first, and then unwind like to Lay Back Camp or something like that. But it's most of the shows this season are just low stakes, if any stakes at all.
Or they're like Misfit of Demon King Academy, where there's stakes, but you don't understand what they are.
That's true. Okay.
Like, there's some kind of, like, war of gods going on, and I have no idea what the fuck they're talking about. Something about the moon? Anyway, so that's it for this little bit. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, so we'll catch up on some of these shows. I assume, like, Train to the End of the World, we'll probably talk about every episode. Because unless it gets really bad somehow, which would be terribly disappointing.
I can't imagine that happening. That would be terrible.
But let's move on to this week's topic. And I mentioned before that, you know, we're scraping the bottom of the bottom of the barrel for anime questions at this point. But I had a brainstorm that says, since Frieren is so incredibly popular, as it should be, I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
You know, it led to me thinking about anime elves. And elves have been in anime all the way back to, like, basically the beginning. Because, you know, fantasy has been one of the most popular genres of elves, or you know, with including elves, going all the way back to like the 60s. So I just said quite simply, name your favorite anime elf and why. Now, nobody said why. And even though I said elf, which is very clearly a singular form of the word, I got elves from almost everybody. But let's go through the answers from the Anitae community, the proletariat, before we get our answers. Now, assume that our answers will coincide with several of these, but what are you going to do? I also told them that they all couldn't say Freyren. Freyren? Yeah, whatever. Let's see. Tenji said Deedlit, which I expected to see. It's an obvious choice, but is it my favorite? I'm not sure. Then he also asked me if half elves count. So yes, half elves counted. As do dark elves and Nightcrawler from X-Men. And Elf. Urfru. And then Ray Zeno gave me 2, 4, 6, 7, technically. He gave me 7, which is not an elf. He gave me Aze from Death March, Ryu Lion from Danmachi, Sylphie and the horny elf from Mushoku Tensei, Defridus from Tales of Wedding Rings. I'm like, come on, dog. Tales of Wedding Rings. I like that show, but come on. Schnee, I haven't been able to figure out how they say it yet. Tierra and the Newgate, which is, she's barely shown up in the anime so far, so I'm hoping to see why he likes her so much. Yarandrala from Banished from the Heroes Party, I Live in the Countryside, which is, she is pretty great. And most of the crew from Eminence and Shadow, which technically makes it 8, 10, 12, 13 he gave me when I asked for one. So that's, I assume several of these picks will show up more than once. Let's see, what else is out here? People questioning why I said Nightcrawler. Because they always called him Elf. So our friend Ray Kaze decided to just say Freyren, since I said not everybody could say it. we're allowed one because it's like the No Homers Club. So he said Freyran. He loves our dorky grandma. Stranger said Marcel from Dungeon Meshi. I really did, by the way, going back to that conversation, I really like that they didn't let her just get away with the dark magic.
No, there are consequences. Horrible, right. Horrific, bloody consequences.
They didn't just go like, oh, she was able to use the black magic and it's fine. It's like, no. And it's not just one episode. You're going to have to deal with this for the rest of the season. I like that. I really enjoy that kind of continuity.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Tenshi just says Freyran again. That's UMR guy. So we'll skip you because you were in the podcast. Your damn nickname threw me off. Gugsy said all the ancients are going to say Deedlith, which I take deep offense to because I'm not going to say Deedlith. That's Mark. Well, I'm going to skip you because you're going to answer it. And skip past Alistair. So Lisa Marie Claire, the elf from Those Who Hunt Elves. I thought about saying Those Who Hunt Elves, but like I don't know how you'd pick one elf. Also, I don't think anybody remembers that show. Any of you guys ever see that?
I'm aware that it exists, but I've never watched
it. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
No, I haven't seen it.
Have you heard of it at least?
I think I might have a bootleg DVD of that.
It's just a really funny show where like they get sent to another world back when that was a novel concept and they have to like track down elves for various hilarious reasons. There's a lot of great elf characters in that. And then John says Pyrotis. So there's not as many answers as I'd like, but at least I didn't get 17 Freyrans. So let's go. Doc, who is your favorite anime elf? And notice I said the singular form of the word.
Elf. Her name is Elf. And she's from Uncle from Another World.
I do love that character.
She's hilarious. She's incredibly tsundere. And poor Uncle comes from a time in Japan before the term tsundere was invented, so he just does not understand that she is into him, is just completely unable to show it. But then he also randomly transforms into her sometimes. so that he can increase his YouTube streaming count. He's a very fun character.
I think that might be the elf character I feel the worst for.
Yeah, yeah.
Like every episode where like he shows his flashbacks, you just feel like so bad for this character who's just like, she's so down bad, but she's so tsundere and he just cannot pick it up at any way.
No.
That poor girl.
It's like, yeah, this elf kept following me around. I gave her a ring. It's like, she thinks you're going to marry her.
I gave her a ring.
I asked for her back. Poor girl.
Oh, yeah, they're
really, really bad taste in men.
Oh, yeah, because, like, Isekai Uncle's basically a creep.
Yeah.
He doesn't mean any harm, but he's a creep.
I mean, he's never going to marry a person. He's going to marry a Sega Saturn, isn't he? So, you know.
That is the best part of that show, is the obsession with Sega.
Yeah.
He gets back and learns that Sega stopped making consoles. He's just, like, broken.
I mean, it's very upsetting, obviously.
I mean, to be fair, I felt the same way when the Dreamcast was discontinued.
Yeah, yeah.
I fucking love the Dreamcast.
Me too. We love it.
Anyway, so that's a good choice. Do you have any backup picks that you insist on including?
No, not really. I'm not a huge fan of elf characters. It's not really my thing. I do quite like the one from Danmachi. She's fine, especially after the most recent series.
Ryu Leon.
I really enjoyed the last season of.
She was really cute.
I was not that bothered about her before, but she got a lot of character development in that season. She and Belle should just get together. I forget about the rest of the characters.
Oh god, there should have been raw dogging going on in that whole season. Like, oh, we're here, we're sharing body warmth, and we're here together in this horrible trauma bonding experience, but we're not going to bang. I'm like, just bang.
I mean, Bella is like 14 or 15, though, dude.
Yeah.
Whatever. It doesn't seem unusual in that world. The goddess wants to bang him.
Yeah.
You know, she's 700 years older than him. She still wants to bang him. I don't like, let's just go with it already.
Rick advocates for statutory rape, right? Okay.
Clearly.
That's the title of the episode. Actually, I do like
that kind of attention.
I do like Mark Wan's recommendation of pages and pages of turgid text being our title for this episode. Okay. It's almost always Doc who says the thing that becomes the title.
I was also going for it for shouldn't base our life on what Gugsy likes either.
Yeah.
Never base your life on Gugsy recommendation. All right, you, Amar guy, what's your answer or answers?
Oh, well, yeah. You could go with, let's see, there's Elf Yamada from Arrow Manga Sensei, or Carla from Don't Hurt Me, My Healer. But oh, no, God. Seriously, though.
I hated that show so much.
I'm a terrible person. I laughed at almost all that show.
I dropped that show. Do you know how often I drop anything?
Yeah. But, no, Ryu Lion, definitely, you know, one of my faves. I'm a lot about voice actors, and you know, that's another one where, you know, it's Sayori Hayami, you know, voices Your Forger, all sorts of stuff. You can know from Urogairu, whole boatloads of stuff. So there's, you know, not a bad character she's voiced. So, but yeah, you know, character itself obviously is totally awesome as well. But now, Doc, you mentioned an elf called Elf, and you know, that's not the one I was originally thinking. I was thinking of the one from Goblin Slayer as well. Who's
High Elf Archer? Yeah, she's great.
Yes,
I love High Elf Archer.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Okay.
That was going to be one of the ones I mentioned. I love High Elf Archer. She's easily the best character in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Elf Yamada, not an actual elf. I would like to point out.
No, but you know,
I guess her name is Elf.
You can't exactly. You're counting. You know. Half elves, dark elves, dark all the rest. Yeah, you're counting Nightcrawler. I mean, come on.
He at least has pointed ears.
Well,
I mean, and a tail, to be fair. Anyway, so Mark Juan, how about you?
For me, it was Amelia from ReZero. Main reason, I said it in the chat, is Rie Takahashi voices there, so of course I'm going to love her character. But I follow almost all the shows she's in. But, I mean, Amelia, I love white hair characters, so, or silver haired in her case. But the discrimination through the trauma she endures and just the changes over the course of the show, because she becomes a completely different character in my eyes more recently. I don't know. She endures, and she's cute, so can't really go wrong. And her powers are really awesome. I love ice powers. Yeah, I really enjoy her character.
I forgot she was an elf. I'm going to be honest. Until you said it, I forgot she was an elf.
I think it's one of the main reasons why she's so hated, because she looks like a witch, and the witch looks like an elf, or might be an elf. I don't remember. But, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was right. I was like, I was trying to remember. Like, is she an elf? I can't, or half elf, or something. I don't remember. It's been a while.
She was in the elf village in that flashback.
Yeah, she's a half elf. She isn't a full one, but yep. Yeah. Still counts for me.
Yeah, I was really glad that they finally developed her a lot more in the second season. You know, she finally got stronger, be able to handle her own shit a little bit. And she got that great scene where she kisses Subaru and then goes, "I'm going to be pregnant now." Which is just classic Japanese. We held hands. It's lewd.
Oldest you can get, man.
You must marry me.
I can't be a bride now.
Yeah.
That's always an overused anime joke that still makes me laugh, is when like something happens to a guy and he's rolling on the ground going, "I can't be a bride now." But these are all excellent choices. I was gonna say Ryu, High Elf Archer from Goblin Slayer was definitely going to be something I brought up. So it was Elf from Isekai Uncle, because he's great. Arceus from Bastard just because she's like ridiculously hot. But my favorite, and this is going way back, is from Record of Lodoss War. It's Pirotis. The stereotypical, I would say, like the prototypical dark elf in a fantasy anime. You know, I think it may have unlocked something in the younger version of Requiem that sticks around to these days, if you get what I mean without me going into detail. Dark elves, kind of a thing for me. Probably goes back to this. But I love Record of Lodoss War. It's a fantastic old school fantasy anime. And I was, that was definitely my favorite character. I was very interested whenever she was on screen. But she's also a great character. Like, you know, she's extremely loyal to her man. And she's like a raging fucking badass. It's one of those, like, Record of Lodoss War is one of those things that, like, I'm sad it's kind of faded into obscurity a little bit, because it was really a big deal when I was young and getting into anime. It was considered like an all-timer back then, and now no one even thinks about it. So if someone were going to remake something like we remade Urusei Yatsura, I'd love to see like a high-definition remake of Record of Lodoss War. But yeah, Dark Elves for life. Except for the one in Don't Hurt Me, My Healer, because that fucked that show. The least funny show ever made. Well, except for Sound Euphonium. Anyway, so that'll be it. With me making fun of Sound Euphonium, we've achieved bingo for this episode. So it's time to wrap it up. Thank you for joining us this week. Join us next time when we'll talk about Train to the End of the World again, but Hybrid will be in charge and he gets to pick the shows. But it'll probably be Train. Also Windbreaker if Gugsy's on. Thank you for joining us. I have been joined this week by Doc Kev.
Bye-bye.
You are my guy.
See you later.
And Mark Kwan.
Yeah, next time, folks.
All right, see you next time. Remember, enjoy those pages and pages of Turgid Text, and never base your life on anything Gugsy says.